I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sherb in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl. You've been acting different, I've been told. Soothe me, I want some sugar in my bowl. I want some steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
So you go down to the shore, kid stuff. Don't you know there's honey in store for you? Big stuff. Let's take a ride and my gravy chain. The door's open wide. Come in from out of the rain. So you stare, call it despair, big stuff. Don't you dare, I'm on the square by you. Let's have a try. It may be that I'm
Miss Billie Holiday.
Mama
My man don't love me. He treats me, oh, so mean. My man, he don't love me. He treats me, oh, so mean. He is the lowest man that I have ever seen. He wears high draped pants, his stripes are really yellow. I said that cat wears high draping. His stripes are really yellow. But when he starts in to love me, woo, love will make you drink and gamble. Love will make you stay out all night long.
You all know what I'm talking about.
I said love will make you drink and gamble. It'll make you stay out all night long. We'll make you do things that you know is wrong. Now you can take my word for this next chorus here. A translation of this, meet me right after the show and I'll explain it all to you. Hey, if you treat me right, baby, I'll stay home every day. Every day. Hold it. I said, if you treat me right, Daddy, I will try stay home every day. Ain't no need to be lying up here. Why, you are so mean. You are mean. You're mean to me, baby. And I know you're gonna drive me away. Turns off and it turns on. I said that love is just like a faucet. It turns off and on. Sometimes when you think it's on, baby, it has turned off and gone.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. As mentioned on the website, there was a plan for another program to take air, but because of unexpected circumstances, we're going to celebrate, continue to celebrate, the life, the artistry of Miss Billie Holiday. And on the line, I have Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin. Hey, Miss Griffin.
Hello.
Miss Doctor. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm grateful for your participation this evening. Very short notice.
Glad to be here.
And to discuss Billie Holiday. Also, I need to sort of back announce what just played before we get started. I just finished playing a song from the present birthday lady, Carmen McRae. Her birthday is April 8th, the day after Billie Holiday's. So it is today. And I just played... what did I just play? Fine and Mellow, her version of Fine and Mellow from her recording of For Lady Day, Volume 1. She did two volumes, and that was fun. And before that, we heard Big Stuff. Now, I heard this song first, courtesy of the Malcolm X soundtrack that Spike Lee did. Are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. It's like, you, this is a good line because there's no noise. But you're familiar with Big Stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, that is such a great song.
It is a great song, and it doesn't get played too often.
No, it does not. And so I was surprised to hear it in the soundtrack, and
right.
I've enjoyed hearing it. You know, Jason Moran has a version of that, that it's not the same as Billie Holiday's because Billie Holiday isn't on it, but... Yeah. I heard him actually do that. He tried to incorporate the original version with Billie Holiday
okay.
with the live band. So he was, you know, it sounded like he was playing music from his iPod.
Right.
And this was at Garvey Park during the Charlie Parker Festival. Mm-hmm. And it just sounded strange, but it's a good song, and I love the song, and I love her singing of it.
Yes,
do I. So that, like I said, was from the Malcolm X original soundtrack, released in 1992. And it was a good soundtrack. It had all kinds of great music. And actually, according to, the, not to get all in, you know, sidetracked, but Spike Lee's goal, apparently, of making that soundtrack was to be representative of radio at that time of when it played different artists, different types of music. It wasn't just pigeonholed into, say, R&B or... whatever, you know,
right.
It wasn't segregated. So
no, and he, you know, he always has great soundtracks and, mm-hmm. and also great scores.
Oh yes, right. Yes, and Terrence Blanchard is usually responsible for
right.
those scores. And before that, we heard the Sugar in My Bowl theme. I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, the Nina Simone version from the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967 through 1972. And from what I understand, Nina Simone was inspired by Billie Holiday, and Billie Holiday was inspired by Bessie Smith.
Absolutely. There's a lineage there.
Yes, yes. So let's talk, Dr. Farah.
Okay, sounds good.
I had to clear my phone. I need to find something. It's too quiet. Gosh. But one thing I want to start off with is your book, And make sure that I have the title correctly. If you can't be free, be a mystery in search of Billie Holiday.
Right.
How did you wind up doing that course of writing?
Well, I had always been interested in Billie Holiday, perhaps a little obsessed with her for, you know, a good part of my life, and had written various things about her, you know, stories and maybe a paper. And when I looked back at a very early version of my prospectus for my dissertation, I actually had a chapter on Billie Holiday that I'd forgotten about, and I never wrote the chapter, but I think I'd always wanted to write about her. And I just decided, I'd written my first book and was thinking about a topic for the second one, and I said, why not finally write something about Billie Holiday, about this artist who has been so important to you? And I just decided to go with that, to kind of go with that passion and follow it through.
So had you, how long did it take for you for that journey, to get that book together?
I mean, well, I think I started thinking about it, you know, I think it probably took me about 5 years altogether, not the writing itself, but just beginning to think about it, beginning to sort of play around with what it would look like. I mean, it's a big step from saying, I want to write a book on Billie Holiday, to really knowing what that book is going to be about.
Right.
And there were, I'd read my colleague, Robert O'Mealy's biography. I'd read all the biographies, but Robert O'Mealy, who was not at that point my colleague, I mean, I knew him, but we didn't work together. He had written a beautiful book on Billie Holiday, and I read it, and I was both inspired and disappointed, because I thought, oh, well, you know, what's the point? This book has been written, and this is the book I wish I had written. So I gave it up for a little while, and then I spent some time, I think it took me about 3 or 4 years, to figure out if I were going to write one, how would it be different from all the stuff that was already out there? And once I finally sort of decided on that, it probably took me 2 years altogether to write the whole thing.
So what did you discover about Billie Holiday as you were writing?
Well, one thing I discovered was that I was not writing a biography, actually, and that there have been a number of biographies out there, so that I wasn't necessarily contributing new biographical information, but that I was just interested in why certain myths about her continue to circulate and continue to be so influential in sort of popular culture and in the arts, and how, you know, a sort of understanding of those myths or an understanding of her icon would be sort of stand up against an understanding of her music. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, more so than discovering something new about her, I think I discovered something about those of us who listen to and consume and are inspired by her music and her life.
Well, one of the things that people seem to glom on to when they think of Billie Holiday is the excesses in her life.
Right.
And it's as though she was her excesses.
Right.
You know, as though she wasn't a great musician, or it was sort of, oh, well, she can sing, but she had these other demons,
right,
and what have you, et cetera, et cetera. How did you address that?
Well, no, you're so right. I mean, I think that, you know, it's true of Billie Holiday. I think it's true of many artists that people tend to obsess, you know, and sort of stick to, you're absolutely right, what you call the excesses of their lives. I think there's something that's fascinating about that. There's something that lets people sort of live vicariously through the danger, what they think of as the danger associated with certain creative artists' lives. And I also think that ultimately it's easier to focus on those things than it really is to explore and think about what it is that makes those people significant to us anyway. It's not really, or not only their excesses, it's their artistry.
Right.
There are lots of people who have excesses and don't have artistry.
This is true.
We don't care about at all, you know. And so I think it becomes a sort of easy way to explain a very complicated gift that people like Billie Holiday give to all of us, that certainly includes their artistry is inclusive of their excesses, but not defined by it.
Well, one of the things with regard to her artistry, she inspired so many people.
You know, absolutely.
I mean, the list is endless, but, you know, Carmen McRae being one.
Right.
Abby Lincoln being another. Dee Dee Bridgewater. Nina Simone.
Right.
Tony Bennett. Frank Sinatra. The list goes on and on. You could add to that if you know of any more.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, she inspired any number of singers, mm-hmm. certainly. She sort of defined jazz singing and popular singing
right.
in a way. And she also inspired a number of musicians. You know, Miles Davis talks about having been inspired by her. Mal Waldron, the pianist, talks mm-hmm. about what he learned from her in terms of phrasing. And
now, he was her pianist, right?
He was her pianist, right. Miles, you know, talks about having listened to her very closely, and I think you can hear Billie Holiday in Miles sometimes. So she inspired the singers, but also the musicians, and I think, you know, a number of poets and writers. You know, the poet Toy Derricotte talks about having been inspired by her and a number of others.
And Gil Scott-Heron.
Yeah. You know, so I think that she's just one of those people who kind of give birth to artists, not only in her form, but in a number of other forms as well. You know, I think creative people find her very compelling and learn a great deal from listening to her.
Right. So where did the journey of looking into investigating Billie Holiday, where has that taken you?
Well, I think it's taken me in a number of places. I mean, it's you know, it's I wrote that book in some ways, you know, out of both a sort of obsession with Billie Holiday and with my own sort of investment in some of the myths that I tried to uncover and unravel. I also wrote it at the time because I thought that it could be a kind of cautionary tale for other artists, younger artists, particularly young women, as a way of saying that there's this sort of narrative of Billie Holiday as the tragic artist and that we need to unpack that. And that also, you know, that there were mistakes that she made, and if we think of her as a kind of creative ancestor figure, she walked a path that we don't necessarily have to walk, or so we don't. You know, so younger artists don't have to walk it, that they can learn from her artistry and yet not fall prey to some of the more difficult things in her life. And when I look, that was a real desire of mine with that book. You know, I thought of it as a kind of cautionary tale. And when I look back on that now, in some ways, I feel like, you know, that as a writer, I was somewhat naive in thinking I could help people avoid the trappings with a book, you know, or that, you know, that was even possible. So I think that it's taken me on a journey both of, you know, extraordinary, you know, I had to grow a lot to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn how to listen to her in ways that I had not listened to before. But I think I also had to recognize my own limitations in terms of what my larger desires were for the project when I first wrote it.
I know. We've talked about this before when you were here with Jerry Allen, how your father introduced you to the music.
Absolutely.
And on the subject of Billie Holiday, I had listened to her, and my father heard me listening to her. And he would wonder, why was I listening to her? You know, he thought, because it was so, the lyrics were so tragic.
Right.
You know, the content was so, and well, it wasn't always, you know, downtrodden.
Right.
I mean, she wasn't always, you know, I mean, the blues isn't always, you know, something beaten.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, there were some other songs that I liked, and she was, and I guess it just seemed too mature for me to be listening.
Yes.
To.
Yes.
But I love the way she phrased things. I just, you know, enjoyed her as her artistry, you know,
yeah,
her
and
delivery.
I think, you know, it's probably something that you, without even realizing how aware you were of the artistry that you were. I mean, that you know, you're able to kind of click in without really understanding what it is you find so compelling. You know that it's not just kind of the lyric, right?
Right.
It's something about what she's doing with them.
Yeah.
And I certainly, I agree with you. I felt that way at a very young age. I think that I don't remember listening to her with my father. I remember my father talking about her, along with a number of other musicians, and, you know, listening to some people with him. But I actually think, I'm sure he played her. He talked about her quite a bit. He talked about seeing her in person. But my father died when I was very young, and it was shortly after his death when I began to listen to his record collection, kind of on my own. And I started listening very closely to her at that point on my own. But very similarly to you, you know, the sort of adults in my life were like, "What is she listening? Why is she so interested in that particular music?" You know.
I don't know. I think my father was just worried.
Yeah,
know, as
right.
a father, is like,
exactly.
"Be
like,
careful."
You know, what does this mean about my child?
Right.
Yes. I feel, you know, I'm sure the adults in my life felt the same way.
Right. So did you, by the way, I'm going to be talking to the filmmakers who, they're working on the documentary.
Right.
Being Billie.
Yes.
Reimagining Billie Holiday.
Nice.
Which seems very similar to what you were doing in your book.
Yeah, I think that there are a number of us who, you know, I always feel this way about ideas. I sort of feel like none of us own ideas, you
right.
know, and that they're actually all around in the universe, and that they, you know, they're there for the catching. And it's funny that a lot of times I think people who are working in the same period often grab a hold of, you know, very similar ideas. And so I never felt like what I was doing in that book was, you know, unique to me, that it was an idea that was out there,
right.
that was kind of being given to us like a gift, and whoever was open to grab it and receive it would do something interesting with it. And so I'm always happy to hear about other projects, and so this film was certainly one of them. And there was another project with BBC Three, BBC Radio, which was done shortly after, I mean, it probably was in production as I was writing my book, shortly after the publication, called Billie and Me. And it was a radio documentary, again, sort of reimagining Billie Holiday, trying to rescue her from the myths that had dominated her story.
Right.
And eventually was turned into a concert that was first performed in London and then is actually traveled throughout the United States. You know, all of these are sort of through different genres, through different forms, concerts, film, book, still very interested in the same idea of reimagining Billie Holiday.
Well, that's the thing that I like about the projects, that they are, you know, sort of rescuing Billie Holiday from the standard the standard drudgery
right.
of you know, oh, the poor downtrodden
right.
Billie, her art suffered, and because
yes.
she suffered, she had good art and whatever, you know.
Yes, right. You know, I mean, I think it's a myth that, you know, captures a lot of artists, unfortunately.
Right.
And you know, I in no way want to be so naive as to say this is a person who didn't suffer.
Oh, no.
You know, but right, but it's, you know, to claim that that is all that goes into the making of the music or of the art form, you know, seems somewhat unfair. And
yes.
They're very complex, complicated individuals who are agents in their own lives and who, you know, manage to very actively produce something quite extraordinary. And I think that that's what all of us who are engaged in these projects hope, that people who observe them will come away with that message and you know, not just look for the great downtrodden narrative.
Right. Well, Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin, first off, you have to introduce yourself better than I did. I just
no,
said your name.
Fine.
Well, there are things that you're associated with, as was, you know, Robert O'Mealy. You're associated
right.
with Columbia University.
I am. I'm a professor at Columbia University in the departments of English and African American Studies, and also the Center for Jazz Studies here at Columbia in New York.
That's it. See, that's what people need to know.
Okay. I think they just need to know that I listen to your show and enjoy it a great deal.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin, for joining Sugar in My Bowl again at such short
anytime.
Notice.
I enjoy it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to move on and talk to the filmmakers, but let's put on some music.
never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you. I see your face in every flower, your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar Mabul is the name of this program, and what we just heard was, well, what we're listening to for the evening. The great Billie Holiday. We're still celebrating Billie Holiday's birth, in addition to Carmen McRae's today. But Billie Holiday's birthday was yesterday. And we just heard You Go to My Head. This is from a compilation that I have. This is a great thing about Billie Holiday. You know, there are all these compilations, and so I get to travel light. This one's called The Ultimate Collection. It is, there's like three CDs and, what, two DVDs? No, one DVD. Yeah, there are three. Wait. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I'm thinking of another set that I have here. This is two CDs and one DVD. And it's a nicely packaged collection. And that's where I got You Go to My Head. And before that, we heard The Very Thought of You, which is another set of Lester Young and Billie Holiday tunes. So on the line, we have filmmakers. We have director Phyllis M. Krum. And we have... help me. We have Ms. Raspberry. My electronics are acting up here. We have Ms. Patricia Raspberry, who is the producer of Being Billy, Reimagining Billie Holiday. And we have Phyllis M. Krum. I am pronouncing that correctly, right, Phyllis?
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. Who is the director of Being Billy, Reimagining Billie Holiday. Thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl at such short notice.
Thank you for having us.
I am so eternally grateful. Now, Phyllis, I'm not hearing you too well. Could you speak up or speak into the phone? Or...
How's this?
A little better. A little louder.
This is better?
Slightly. Are you using the speaker? Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Just need you to really speak out.
Okay, will do.
So, tell me, how did you, how, whoever can speak to this, how did this production begin?
Well, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Is this Phyllis?
Great. This is Phyllis.
Okay.
Yes. Well, there were a confluence of factors that motivated me to write the film. But I suppose the shortest answer and perhaps the most relevant is the fact that my sense of Billie Holiday, as you know, as you just discussed with Professor Griffin, was shaped when I was very young, and influenced primarily by her music and the few images of her that I'd seen coming of age in a then pre-internet era. And that sense was of a beautiful, vibrant, swinging musical innovator. But you know, and as you all just discussed, those descriptors are rarely, if ever, mentioned by the general public in conversations about Billie. And so, you know, finding myself at odds with my understanding and the seemingly prevailing notion that she was this hapless victim who created great music in spite of herself led me, you know, to seek some sort of resolution. So I did, a lot of research and decided that I was initially going to write an anthology. But Dr. Griffin wrote that brilliant and beautiful, beautiful work, If You Can't Be Free, Be a Mystery.
Right.
And so while I was excited, and as he expressed about Dr. O'Mealy's book, you know, sort of disappointed.
Right.
And so, you know, a couple of years later, after having sat on it, I said, you know what, I can do a visual exploration. And that's what we've done.
And this film has you visiting various artists. A couple that I can think of are former Sugar in My Bowl guests, Dee Dee Bridgewater and Terry Lynn Carrington.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
We actually spoke to 16 people, many of them musicians,
mm-hmm.
You know, and poets, writers, scholars. But yeah, we talked to, would you like me to list them?
Please.
Okay. We spoke with Angela Davis, Kimberly Williams Crenshaw, the late Abby Lincoln,
mm-hmm.
Layla Hathaway, Tracy Morris, Lorraine Feather.
Now that's Tracy Morris, who's the Brooklyn poet.
Yes, the Brooklyn poet, Brooklyn-based poet.
Yes.
Lorraine Feather, Nikki Giovanni, Sonia Sanchez, Carmen de Lavallade, Annie Ross, as you mentioned, Terry Lynn Carrington and Dee Dee Bridgewater, mm-hmm. Madeline Peru, Joni Mitchell, Diane Reeves, and Ricky Lee Jones.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
So how did you decide? who you were going to approach?
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with the works of most of the musicians anyhow.
Right.
And you know that Billy's influence is just palpable in their work.
Right.
And so it was, you know, just clear to me that I needed to speak, you know, especially with Aditi Bridgewater and Madeline Peru, and Rickety Jones. But the other contributors, in some way, had either done work that addressed Billie Holiday. As an example, Angela Davis's book, Blues Legacies,
right.
And where she examined, Billie Holiday's musical legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you know, having done the research over the years, you know, these people sort of supported, you know, my sense that, you know, Billie Holiday was, again, more than this hapless victim. And so I just thought I'd bring them all together and, you know, and see what we came up with.
Right. So, Trish, what do you have to add to this?
Well, this whole project for me, I'm coming from a very different place, whereas Phyllis, you know, said that she grew up, you know, with the music of Billie Holiday. I don't fall in that camp. I've known Phyllis for many years, and I know that she's had some kinship, if you will, with Billie Holiday that I never quite, I always respected but didn't quite understand fully. And so this process, the project has really been an educational process for me, in that I have really, over, you know, the time that we've been working on this, or she's been working and I've been watching and learning, I've come to have such a much greater appreciation for Billie Holiday. It's really fascinating to watch the way that, you know, through these interviews, through talking to all these women whose lives and music were shaped by Billie Holiday, it's kind of, it's unraveling and revealing aspects of her life, her artistry, her womanhood that I really wasn't familiar with at all. And so this has been an incredible journey for me, actually.
So as a producer, what did you have to do to get this project off the ground?
Good question. my role has been interesting in that this is the first time I've served in kind of this producer role. Mm. And so for me, again, I've really pretty much just kind of sat back and watched Phyllis work her magic. This is, you know, really, just to be very clear, this is her baby. This is her project. But, you know, I've been, you know, at times played the role of fundraiser, at times played the role of supporter, of sounding board, of a brainstorming partner, and really just kind of helped in ways that I could help her kind of put together, which is such a huge project. And so at this point, you know, where we are right now, I think because Phyllis has spent so much time, and the interviews are incredible, the information that she's gathered is just huge. Really, my job at this juncture is to just kind of help her kind of rein it in, because there's so much. So I'm kind of playing the heavy, if you will, and kind of trying to make sure that, you know, we can get, you know, tell an amazing story without sharing every little bit of everything we've gotten, just because there is so much. So again, Phyllis has done all the heavy lifting, and I just kind of see myself as the supporter and kind of background player in this case.
So, Phyllis, when I first came upon the film, I think it was 2009, mm-hmm. and it is now 2012. Would you like to discuss what's been happening in between, or?
Well, the film took a hiatus in late 2009. I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and I've been dealing with that for the last 26 months. But we are back, and we are strong, and we are about 2 weeks out of being done with all of the video editing portion.
Wow.
And sending it off, hopefully, by mid-May to our music director and an audio studio for Sweetening, and then it'll be, you know, ready for the world.
Now, Patrice Rushen, if I'm not mistaken, is the musical director, or I'm not sure what the title is, but she's responsible.
Yes, she's our music director, yes.
Yes. So excellent. Did you also talk to her? Did you also interview her?
No, she's not one of my interviewees.
Okay.
I'm really excited about what she's going to bring to the project musically.
Excellent.
She's amazing.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much. You know, you had also mentioned distribution. How is that being handled? I think at some point you're going to have to find one. So how are you going about that? Are you going to be doing festivals and the like?
Exactly. PBS has expressed an interest in the project, but outside of that, what I have my eye on is you know, putting the film in as many festivals as possible and hopefully, you know, acquiring, you know, a distribution deal through that process. But I'll also be, you know, shopping. Once the film is done, I'll, you know, have more time to focus on that, but I'll also be individually shopping for distribution.
I guess since the film isn't done yet, it's too soon to sort of ask for a schedule and of when you'll be in New York and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, it's nearly done, and I don't see any problem with coming out by invitation to, you know, for runs. I'm certainly open to that, but I'm optimistic that by end June, early July, I'll have a finished product.
Okay. Oh, that would be great.
And as producer, I just want to add that we do have a website, which is beingbilly.com, and we encourage people to come check it out just to get a sense of the film, a general overview. And, of course, we'd greatly appreciate any donations anyone would like to make. We have most of our assets at this point, you know, video footage and archival photos and so forth, but we still need funding for the audio component of the film. So, again, if people would like to go check out the site and make a donation, we'd appreciate anything people would like to donate.
Now, is this audio with regard to just the audio for the film or audio with regard to licensing and things of that nature?
It is in part licensing. I have begun some of the licensing process, but the sweetening in Patrice has to be paid, of course.
Yes.
The sweetening in and of itself is, you know, relatively expensive.
Uh-huh.
But can I just jump in here and say...
Please, really, this is Phyllis, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I really have to send a shout-out, if you will, to Dr. Griffin, because when this project was in its infancy, she was one of the first people that I reached out to, and she was gracious enough to meet with me and to, you know, offer any assistance that, you know, I needed through this process. Now, I haven't had to avail myself of that offer, but, you know, I was so, so appreciative of that, and I love her work.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. I hope you heard that, Dr. Griffin. If not, I'll have to, like, clip it out and send it to you if you've gone to bed already. And I know she hasn't. She's probably listening right now. Well, thank you so much for that. Is there anything else that you want to add with regard to the film to let people know about? Or?
It's a beautiful film, yes. And we can't wait until, you know, the world can see it.
And we're looking at possibly June?
I don't know that the world will be able to see it in June.
Well, not the world, but at least New York.
Right. Well, but yeah, I think that by July, early July, it will be completed.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Phyllis M. Kroom and Patricia Raspberry.
Yes.
Patricia Raspberry being the producer and Phyllis M. Kroom being the director and writer and chief cook and bottle washer.
You got it.
Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Good night.
And this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. And I think I'm going to go to something more lengthy. If you'd like, you can give me a call at 212-209-2900 if you have any questions. But let's get into some more music. All right?
every Saturday night, where the highbrows get together, it's just too bright. They all congregate at an all-night house, and what they do is ooh-bop-dee-da. Old Hannah Brown from way across town gets full of corn and starts bringing them down. And at the break of day, you can hear old Hannah say, give me a pig foot and a bottle of beer, send me gates, I don't care, I feel just like I want a clown. Get the piano parody, because he's bringing me down. He's got rhythm when he stomps his feet, sends me right off to sleep. Check all your razors and your guns, we're gonna be arrested when the white gun comes. Give me a pink foot and a bottle of beer, send me dead, I don't care. Give me a pink foot and a bottle of gin, send me down. Move right in. I feel just like I'm gonna shout. Give the piano serenade, because knocking me out. He's got rhythm. Woo! When he stomps his feet, sends me right off. Back all your razors and your guns, and do the huckabuck until the morning sun. Give me a big foot and a bottle of gin. Send me a daddy. Check all your races and
your gun. Do huckle until the rising sun. Give me a pickle and a bottle of gin. Move me, daddy. Move right in. And a bottle of gin. Send me, daddy, move right in.
Like many of you, like many Americans, I have felt frustrated and betrayed by the state of the mainstream media in this country, a media whose priorities seem out of step with their responsibilities. We need a media that strengthens democracy, not a media that strengthens the government. We need a media that enriches public discourse, not one that enriches corporations.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
I wished on the moon for something I never knew. I wished on the moon for more than I ever knew. A sweeter rose, a softer sky, an April day that would not dance away. I wished on a star to throw me a beam or two. I begged of a star and asked for a dream or two. I looked for every loveliness. It all came true. I wished on the moon for you. Wished on the moon for you. ain't got a friend. My heart is broke and it won't ever mend. I ain't much caring, just where it will live. But I must have that man. I'm like an oven that's crying for heat. He treats me awfully each time that we meet. It's just unlawful how that boy can cheat. But I must have that man. He's hot as Hades, ladies, not safe in his arms when she's kissed. And I'm afraid when he's cooled off, maybe I'm ruled off his lips. I'll never be missed. I need that person much worse than just bad. I'm half alive and he's driving me mad. He's only human if he's to be had. I must have that man. He's hot as Hades, ladies, not safe in his arms when she's kissed. And I'm afraid when he's cooled off, maybe I'm ruled off his lips. I'll never be missed. I need that person much worse than just bad. I'm half alive and he's driving me mad. He's only human if he's to be had. I must have that man.
So sad, want the world to know just what the blues is all about. Lady sings the blues, she tells her side, nothing to hide. Now the world will know just what the blues is all about.
Well, the blues ain't nothing but a pain in your heart. When you get a bad start, when you and your man have to part, I ain't gonna sit around and cry no more. I know I won't die because I love him more. Lady sings the blues, she's got them bad. She feels so sad, and now the world will know she's never gonna sing them no more.
Thank you.
she's never gonna sing them no more.
Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. Yeah, yeah. Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. No more, no more. Jordan, no more. No more. No more.
Once I was young, yesterday perhaps, danced with Jim and Paul and kissed some other chaps. Once I was young, but never was naive. I thought I had a trick or two up my imaginary sleeve. And now I I was naive. I didn't know what time it was. Then I met you. Oh, what a lovely time it was. How sublime it was too. Didn't know what day it was. You held my hand, warm like the month of May it was, and I'll say it was grand, grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, hear your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was. Life was no prize. I wanted love, and here it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise, and I know what time it is now. Then I met you. lovely child it was, and sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand, warm like the month of May it was, and I'll say it was grand. Grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was. Life was no prize. I wanted love, and here it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise, and I know what time it is now.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. And I should probably let you know what you've been listening to thus far. What you just heard was I Didn't Know What Time It Was, a lovely Rodgers and Hart tune that has, of course, Billie Holiday on vocals, Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Ben Webster on tenor saxophone, Jimmy Rowles on piano, Barney Kessler on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, and Alvin Stoller on drums. And before that, we heard Dee Dee Bridgewater. Dee Dee Bridgewater from Eleanor Fagan to Billy with Love from Dee Dee Bridgewater. It is the Grammy-winning Eleanor Fagan, 1915 through 1959, to Billy with Love from Dee Dee Bridgewater. Yes, the Grammy-winning Dee Dee Bridgewater. And that, and we heard from there, Lady Sings the Blues, a very interesting arrangement of Lady Sings the Blues. And on, and the lineup for that, actually the arrangements are by Edsel Gomez, who is on piano. Of course, vocals Dee Dee Bridgewater, Christian McBride on bass, and Lewis Nash on drums. And we have a tenor sax solo by James Carter. That man can get down, actually. You know, they all can. But that arrangement, Edsel Gomez. Before that, we heard I Must Have That Man. And that was actually, that and I Didn't Know What Time It Was is from the other box set I was referencing. It is a 6-CD, The Complete Verve Studio Master Takes. It's a massive thing. I got it some time ago when I used to be in a place where I could get those lovely things. And I'm grateful to have it. It is helping me travel light. And I was going to play that, but I wound up playing instead. Actually, first let me get back to I Didn't Know What Time It Was. Did I tell you what that line? Yes, I did. I Must Have That Man. The lineup on there was, of course, Billie Holiday vocals, Charlie Shavers trumpet, Tony Scott clarinet, Paul Kinichet. 212-209-2900. You can give me a call once we put on a song, and you can let me know what that, what his last name, how it's pronounced, because I'm sure somebody will know how. He was on tenor saxophone, Paul Kinichet. And, Wynton Kelly on piano, Kenny Burrell on guitar, Aaron Bell on bass, and Lenny McBrown on drums. And that was from a 1956, release of Lady Sings the Blues, but it is included in this lovely, lovely, massive box set, the complete Verve Studio Master Takes. And let's see, before that we heard I Wished on the Moon. And yeah, that has Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Ben Webster on tenor saxophone, Jimmy Rawls on piano, Barney Kessler on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, and Alvin Stoller on drums. Which is a very similar lineup as I Didn't Know What Time It Was. And let's see, before that we heard from Abby Sings Billy, Pigfoot and a Bottle of Beer. Abby Sings Billy was actually two different volumes of, but they are now one volume. Well, not one volume. They're two CDs in one lovely set. And it's called Abby Sings Abby. They sell the two together these days. And, it's Abby Lincoln on vocal, Harold Vick on tenor saxophone, James Wideman on piano, Tarek Shaw on bass, and Mark Johnston on drums. And let's see, before that, we had a conversation with Phyllis M. Coombs and the director, and Patricia Raspberry, the producer of Being Billy, Reimagining Billie Holiday. And the website to find out more about that film, if you missed the exchange, is www.beingbillie.com. Find out more about that. Find out how you can help, because they still need help with the audio portion of the film. Fingers crossed, the film should be available in July, the beginning of July. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that at festivals and find out how we can get it in New York. All right. Let's see. What do I have coming up here? Why don't I go here next? Stay tuned.
You're mean to me. Why must you be mean to me? Gee, honey, it seems that you love to see me crying. I don't know why I stay home each night when you say you're gonna phone and then you don't leave. Here am I all alone, singing the blues and crying. You treat me coldly each day in the year. You always scold me whenever somebody's near. Dear, it must be great fun to be mean to me. You shouldn't, but can't you see just what you mean to me? So,
And that was Carmen McRae. Carmen McRae from her Lady Day volumes. They're not sold together. This was Mean to Me from Volume 2 for Lady Day, Carmen McRae. The birthday lady. Yesterday was her birthday, the 8th, and Billie Holiday's birthday was the 7th. So I'd like to thank, oh my gosh, I should have written his name. How could I forget? Okay, so I've been given Paul Quinichet. I've been given Paul Quinichet. And between the two, you work it out. But somebody, a shy caller, told me that Paul Quinichet was, Daryl from the Midwest told me Quinichet. The shy caller told me that Paul Quinichet was called the vice president because he sounded a lot like Lester Young. But the first person to tell me was Kwame Brathwaite. The photographer, the great Kwame Brathwaite, who was listening to Sugar in My Bowl. I feel so honored. And thank you, everybody else, for your information. Mean to Me, told you that. Oh, yes, on Mean to Me, that was Carmen McRae, of course, on lead vocals. Zoot Sims on tenor sax, Marshall Atwell on piano, John Leftwich on bass, and Donald Bailey on drums. And let's see where else I'm going to go with this. I have all these CDs around, and then I took a phone call, which sort of sidetracked me. But why don't I do this? Because I like Dee Dee Bridgewater, and she'll give me some time to get something else happening with these. Come on. Goodness. There you are. Okay. Come out, wherever you are. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name is Joyce Jones, and I really, really need to thank Hank Williams, my partner, for... He's the person to whom I bounce all of this information off of, and he sort of helped me in shaping this evening's program, from an unexpected occurrence. But, hopefully we'll have, James M. Toomey back in the future. And let me go here with Dee Dee. Stay tuned.
I was a stranger in the city. Out of town were the people I knew. I had a feeling of self-pity. What to do? The outlook was decidedly blue. But as I walked through the foggy streets alone, it turned out to be the luckiest day I've known.
London town had me low and it had me down. I viewed the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost all its charm. How long I wondered could this thing last? But the age of miracles had not passed. For suddenly I saw you standing there, and in foggy London town the sun was shining everywhere.
treat you the way I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? There's nothing in the world too good for a guy that's good and true. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? Fur coat for Christmas, a diamond ring, big Cadillac car, and everything. There's nothing in the world that I wouldn't do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? What makes me treat you the way I do? Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? There's nothing in the world too good for a girl that's good and true. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? Fur coat for Christmas, a diamond ring, big Cadillac car, and everything. It's love that makes me treat you the way I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? No kisses, a fine romance. My friend, this is, we should be like a couple of hot tomatoes. But you're as cold as yesterday's mashed potatoes. A fine romance, you won't Nessa. A fine romance, you won't wrestle. I might as well play bridge with my old maid aunts. I haven't got a chance. This is a fine romance.
My friend, this is we two.
two should be like clams in a dish of chowder. But we just fizz like parts of a sideless powder. A fine romance with no clinches. A fine romance with no pinches. You're just as hard to land as the Ile de France. I haven't got a chance. This is a fine romance. It was just one of those things, just one of those crazy flings, one of those bells that now and then rings, just one of those things. It was just one of those nights, just one of those fabulous flights. A trip to the moon on gossamer wings. Just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it, when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot not to cool down. So goodbye, dear, and amen. He is hoping we meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things. One of those bells that now and then ring. just one of those things. It was just one of those nights. Just one of those fabulous flights. A trip to the moon on gossamer wings. Just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it, when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot not to cool down. So goodbye, dear and amen. Here's hoping we meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. You know, I can't have music playing under me because it's Billie Holiday. It'd just be wrong. So what we just heard just then was just one of those things. The Cole Porter tune. That was Billie Holiday on vocals, of course. Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet. Ben Webster on tenor saxophone. Jimmy Rowles on piano. Barney Kessel. Yes, I said it right this time. Barney Kessel. I made the mistake. I said Barney Kessler. I know Barney Kessel. I got it. Barney Kessel. Thank you, everyone. And on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass. Alvin Stoller on drums. And before that, we heard A Fine Romance. A Fine Romance. You know, a lot of the Billie Holiday selections from within the midnight hour, past the midnight hour, are from a lovely 6-CD box set. The Complete Verve Studio Master Takes. And so, I didn't have to bring as many as I probably would have had to. But A Fine Romance is from that collection. And we have Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Benny Carter on alto saxophone, Jimmy Rowles on piano and celeste, Barney Kessel on guitar, John Simmons on bass, and Larry Bunker on drums. Before that, we heard G Baby, Ain't I Good to You. And that is, let's see, who do we have on the lineup there? Coming up next will be La Nueva Alternativa. I've been watching them congregate out front. So they'll be on time. Okay, what do we have here? It is G Baby Ain't I Good to You, and that lineup is, oh, come on, here we go. Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Billie Holiday on vocals, Ben Webster tenor saxophone, Jimmy Rowles on piano, Barney Kessel on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, and Larry Bunker on drums. I guess this sort of period with the selections that I've played had a similar lineup. But with slight changes. Before that, we heard Foggy Day. Foggy Day from Dee Dee Bridgewater, Eleanor Fagan to Billy with Love from Dee Dee Bridgewater. And as mentioned before, that lineup is, the arrangements are by Edsel Gomez, and he's on piano. And we have, Christian McBride on bass, and Lewis Nash on drums. And on this selection, did we have? Let's see. Was he on this selection? No. But on other selections, there's James Carter on, but he was not on Foggy Day. Before that, we heard Mean to Me. That was Carmen McRae from her Lady Day tribute for Lady Day. This is from Volume 2, and on that we have Carmen McRae on vocals, Zoot Sims, tenor sax, Marshall Atwell on piano, and John Leftwich on bass, Donald Bailey on drums. And we're going to go out of here to get ready for La Nueva Alternativa. Let's see, I had an idea of what I wanted to play, but then I started talking, and I don't really have that much time to work with. But, yeah, I think I'll find something on this disc. Which disc is this? Yeah. I've had a little fun. I have. This has been really nice. And, hopefully next program, it'll be what you're more accustomed to. But I really had a great time. And, I just like this song, so I don't necessarily... It's not, well, okay, I just like this song, and I don't know whether I played it earlier, and I don't think I did, but I just love it anyway. So here it goes. It's Love is Here to Stay, the Gershwin tune, the George and Ira Gershwin tune, with Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Ben Webster on tenor saxophone, Jimmy Rawls on piano, Barney Kessel on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, and Alvin Stoller on drums, and... No, wait a minute. What did I just do? Oh, my goodness. Let's just get it started. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. My name's Joyce Jones. You have been listening to Sugar in My Bowl. Coming up next, La Nueva Alternativa. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Stay tuned.
It's very clear our love is here to stay. Not for a year.
Oh, yes. An extra thank you to Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin and to Patricia Raspberry, producer and director and chief cook and bottle washer of... Being Billy, reimagining Billie Holiday, Phyllis M. Kroom, director. Go to beingbilly.com to find out more about the film if you missed the exchange. And extra thanks to Hank Williams. Stay tuned.
Rockies make crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay, but our love is here to stay.
This is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.